and assure success. All for one and one for all.
Welcome back.
Unity means solidarity.
Solidarity, baby. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And also, incidentally, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. And when you go there, make sure you click on the banner for Guerrilla Media to check out the ridiculously awesome articles that we're posting up there. A lot of which are a little bit freaky. Good morning, Will.
Morning, Vinny.
Yeah, bro, I went out to see that last Airbender yesterday, right? Took the girlfriend out for her birthday. And, today's supposed to be the alien invasion, by the way, just in case anybody's wondering.
Oh, is it? I can't wait.
Yeah.
I'll get out my cookies and milk.
Yep. And get out your tinfoil hats. But anyway, last Airbender I saw it, and my God, full to the brim with Illuminati symbolism, right on the knot of the back of the Airbender's head and the tattoos is an all-seeing eye pyramid. Right there, it's got this little symbol. I don't know. It sort of looks like a funny question mark instead of an eye on the back of his head, and he's also got one on the front of his head as well, right where the third eye is supposed to be. You know, the pineal gland. And what else? When they bow to him, they do that Masonic fertility hand sign where you make a kind of diamond with your thumbs and index fingers, and you place them down on the ground, and it makes a sort of a diamond. Doing that when they were bowing to the old Airbender, and his staff as well was a ring of Illuminati all-seeing eye pyramids, literal Illuminati all-seeing eye pyramids, the whole way around the tip of his staff. And I thought to myself, you know what? This is a really, really good, awesome movie. Shame about the occultic symbolism all throughout it.
Well, you're not meant to notice that, Vinny. You're just meant to sit back and enjoy it and be mesmerized by the lovingness of Lucifer. And I mean, seriously, I'm not against all 6 million Freemasons like people think. I just understand what it represents beyond being some sort of social club like Rotary want to pretend they are too. You know, and even at the start of the movie, like, I just downloaded the trailer. I just have a look at the trailer here. Paramount Pictures. What's Paramount Pictures? A whole bunch of stars, I guarantee. It's like 33 or some round number of theirs. At the top of a mountain peak, so it's making a triangular form. Paramount Pictures. But Columbia Pictures is three, a trinity of cloud forms forming pyramids, just like at Giza, with a great pyramid in the middle. With the goddess holding an illuminated torch at the top of it, and it says Columbia Pictures, you know, as in the District of Columbia, as in the Columbian sect of the Illuminati that went underground in Bavaria. Yeah. Well, chapter 322, if you want to convert it to the Skull and Bones guys, but it's all occultic, of course.
Yep. Welcome to the entertainment industry. If you're in business, politics, or entertainment, you've probably either A, encountered some description of occultic symbolism, or B, created some of it. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show!
Oh yes, don't you just love that? Speaking of occultic symbolism, Will, what was that? What was that? That god or something you were talking about the last Airbender?
Oh, I'm still just watching the end of a 3-minute trailer, but it's just like packed. So, wow, I'm just going into overload here. I need a notebook. And this is just watching the trailer. I've got to see this film. It's just complete.
It's a good film.
This is like being this film is like being initiated into the 32nd degree or something. It's crazy. Everything but taking your pants off and the mud wrestling and stuff. Like, it's just, it's sick.
You get to take your pants off and do mud wrestling in the 33rd degree?
Well, just in the first degree, in fact, you've got to get a little bit jiggy and, you know, one trouser. You haven't heard of that? You pull up your right trouser leg and pull and expose your left breast. And and whilst being hoodwinked, having a noose around your neck. And then the Grand Master of the Lodge, the Worshipful Master, will, in the blue degrees, will stick a Masonic sword or dagger to your nipple, to your exposed nipple, whilst reading rites, and you've got to say, more light, what do you want? More light. You've got to answer the questions right. You've got to face east and all this sort of weird stuff. But then it gets more and more extreme. That's only the first degree. Then it gets more and more weird. And to join Skull and Bones, you have to, one part of it, apart from the nude mud wrestling, is you have to masturbate in a coffin whilst exposing your sexual past, present, and future fantasies. I mean, this is
not that everybody else has got it on you. Oh, yeah.
This is, yeah, just so they build brotherhood, so that, you know, so like I say, is it easier for George Bush to say he's a fundamentalist Christian or to join Skull and Bones? Obviously. He's a Bonesman for life. He was tapped. He was one of the 15 to join in 1968, and that's him. But this last Airbender movie... By the way, if you doubt any of this is real, all you need to do is go on Google Earth. Most people have got Google Earth. And you go to DC. You zoom in on DC. Go and have a look at the CIA while you're at it and see how massive that head car park is outside the CIA's headquarters at Langley. To realize who you're dealing with here. But then go on DC and then type in the word Masonic and then go enter, and you'll see how many lodges pop up. At number 1000 U Street is the Prince, about three blocks away from DC. Number 1000 U Street, there is a black war victim memorial. A memorial to the black man who died in the Civil War. Right in front of the Prince Hall Masonic Lodge. Because, of course, we're all about worship and death. The Prince Hall Masonic Lodge there is Barack Obama's lodge. Okay, but if you type in Masonic, you'll just see red dots pop up all over DC. You can't make this stuff up. And Barack Obama's one is there, number 1,000, is in 1,000 points of light on U Street there. In this movie, The Last Airbender, in the trailer anyway, it starts off with earth, air, water, fire, these elements combined, forming some sort of prophetic power. This looks like a young... Asian kid.
No, he's not Asian, but...
What's his descent?
Well, I don't know exactly his descent, but he looks like a white boy to me.
Well, he looked a little bit dark to me, but anyway...
No, definitely not dark. I mean, maybe that's just your perception because you're part Cuban.
Maybe I'm wanting him to be...
Oh, hold on, you cut out there a little bit, Will.
Oh, sorry. Maybe I'm just willing him to be. But anyway, he seems to be, I don't know, some descent anyway. He's not blonde hair, blue-eyed anyway.
No,
he's not. But he has this prophetic sort of power, and he comes to Earth. Is this right, Vinny? He sort of comes to Earth to save everyone or kill everyone?
No, I mean, let me just break it down, you know. Get it on like Donkey Kong. Basically, the Last Airbender, is the last surviving member of a tribe called the Airbenders. Now, there are Earthbenders, Waterbenders, and Firebenders. The Firebender Nation is basically the Indian nation, and they have the power to control fire, and they've got big machines, warships, that kind of thing. Waterbenders... they live in the far north and the far south, where the ice caps are, closer to their elements. And the Earthbenders are more like the Asian Chinese cultures, and they live more central. And what the Airbender, they also had a tribe as well, but it was wiped out by the Firebenders because they knew that the Airbender would become an avatar, and the avatar holds the power to manipulate all four elements. However, when you become an avatar, you have to forego all family, and you can never have a normal life. And being a child, when he found out that he was going to become the avatar, as he was being initiated, he ran away. And when he ran, he was forced into the sea. And... formed an air pocket around himself, which turned to ice and trapped him for 100 years. Over the 100 years that the Airbender was away, trying to supposedly his role is to keep peace amid the four nations and the four elements, and you don't actually have to kill or destroy anything in order to keep the peace. You only need to show how much power you have, more or less, and. These two children find him under the ice and just crack it open, and this big, you know, icy sphere kind of comes out, and they crack that open, and he's got this, you know, this beast that he rides on the air and stuff like that. And the son of the Fire King has been banished for being too weak. Refusing to fight his father in a duel and refusing to fight his sister in a duel. And he can only return if he captures the Airbender. And whilst the Airbender was away for the 100 years, every other member of the Airbender tribe was killed. And, after that, he has to, like, go and learn how to bend water and well, because he can only bend air. Right. Although he can technically has the ability to mess around with all the four elements, he can only do air at the moment because he abandoned his training beforehand. So he's an unprepared initiate, more or less. And in this particular segment of the film, which I suspect is only the first of four, because they had, it says on the side, book one, water. He goes to the Northern Water Tribe in order to learn how to bend it. Right. And he goes up there, and the power source for the waterbenders are these two fish called the moon and the ocean spirits. And these two little fish are sitting in this pool, right? And one of the fish is black with a white spot, and the other fish is white with a black spot. And they're defined as the yin and the yang fish.
Let me take it off there, Vinny. Let me take it from there, because that connects to this the Buddhist idea of a Maitreya, and the idea that was taken from Buddhism and injected into theosophy and the occult and some of Alice Bailey's teachings from Buddhism. The fifth Buddha, although Buddhists claim that Buddhism isn't a religion, they have prophecy nonetheless. And the fifth Buddha of this age, or eon, or astrological age, that ends on December 21st or 23rd, depending on who you believe, 2012, the fifth Buddha would become the Maitreya. And the Maitreya, according to the Theosophics, is the world Christ, overshadows Christ. In fact, the Maitreya is their ascended master. So of human form, but in ultimate spiritual purity, which, because...
Oh, I'll
because
add on
the
to
new
that.
Age and the,
Hold on a second. I'll also add on to that. The Avatar is also a person who gets reborn when he dies, like the Dalai Lama does, and he gets taken into this temple where there are literally thousands and thousands of statues of him in all of his different past lives.
Well, there you go. I didn't know, but see, it's a Buddhist theme, but then it takes it on to a more New Age, occultic ideal, which is what Buddhism really is, and upset a few people there, but what I'm trying to get at here is you'll see how it ties into a lot of agendas. The world Christ, the Maitreya, is the sort of antichrist to a lot of Christians, and is the kind of spiritual leader of a lot of New Age groups. They're all waiting for him to come back. Some of these guys are Masons. Some of these guys are Theosophics. Some of these guys are Zeitgeist followers. it's a common thread amongst a lot of New Age practitioners, put it that way. And they believe this guy to be a positive guy. And according to Christian text, this guy will come and perform miracles. This guy will... A lot of people will think he is Christ. And so notice that last airbender, he has a cross made up of all these other weird occultic symbols on his back. He has a cross.
His head, he has a cross and an all-seeing eye pyramid, an upside-down all-seeing eye pyramid with a wonky question mark instead of an eye.
Yeah. So see what I mean? So it's the Buddhism, it's the yin-yang, and it's the Christ, and he's the world Christ. Yeah.
Now,
this is something pushed heavily by Benjamin Cram and Alice Bailey. You know, Benjamin Cram is the UN guy, the follower of Alice Bailey. And he is also a member of a group called the Aetherius Society, founded in 1955 by King George in London, which is based around contact with extraterrestrials. Benjamin Cram believes he can channel Maitreya, just as Aleister Crowley channeled an entity he called Iwas. But anyway, these guys are weird. So they use yoga, spiritual teachings of yoga, and mediumship through yogic practices to channel extraterrestrials. So it's what they call a UFO religion. But anyway, the Aetherius Society is just like the Savage Club. It's just like a whole bunch of other little Masonic offshoots in London. And people will say, oh, they're not Masonic, nothing to do with Masonic. Yeah, well, that's why the Savage Club, that was founded in the 20s, in later years, built a giant Masonic lodge on site because they realized 80 to 90% of their membership came from Freemasonry. Surprise, surprise. You know, it's no surprise to me. It's all the same crap, to be honest. So, you know, look into it. There's a common thread here. It's aliens, it's the New Age, it's the occult, it all blends in, and a lot of it comes together with this Maitreya figure, this world Christ, who they believe is coming back very soon, and he's going to deceive a whole bunch of the world before destroying a whole bunch of the world, because he's got all these powers. And that's basically what these buildings and everything are built in homage to. They put up, like in Auckland, we have One Tree Hill, one of the highest volcanoes. They've stuck a giant obelisk on. And they have them facing north in times of war and all this sort of stuff to give them power. That's almost a Norse or Druid ideal. But it's, like I say, it all crosses over. There's so much crossover, and they believe that in fact, collects a true obelisk in a single piece of stone, as the Egyptians made them, and the Romans installed about 13 or so of them, and shifted them to different sites. They believe it captures Lucifer's energy and empowers their empire at the same time as paying homage to him. So all these sites, anyway, how Tokyo and Texas and things like that are really important to them, that they believe in like certain latitudes, like the 33rd degree of latitude being a real important area for them to gather such cosmic energy. They're into some weird stuff, guys, and they're using your tax dollars to to carry the stuff out.
Yeah, your tax dollars hard at work, ladies and gentlemen. Isn't it nice? Oh, hey, and speaking of very, very nice, interesting article here that got sent in by a producer yesterday. The article was originally entitled Mayors Unite to Fight Super City, right? Southern Mayors Unite. And you know what that sounds like to me? It sounds like, oh, they're really upset with the super city and they don't want the South Island to become one. You know what the article's actually about? How all the South Island mayors say, oh, because Auckland's such a big economic power now that it's a super city, we need to turn the entire frickin' South Island into a super city in order to compete. God dang it! Oh, why is everybody so freaking dumb to actually believe these scumbags? And I told everybody, yes, you know, I was saying as early as a year ago, I was telling everybody, well, this is what's going to happen. As soon as the super city in Auckland happens, then they're going to start making all the rest of the country into super city, region by region by region by region, one at a time, incrementally before, and then they're going to amalgamate all the super cities into one all-powerful national government that will be able to dictate every aspect of your freaking life, you know? And people didn't believe me. They say, oh, Vinny, you're crazy. You're reading too much into it. It's right there in the paper.
Look, Vinny, this is the problem. When they, whoever they are, we've just been talking about, they control the four winds, and you have a society with no cornerstones, with no dogma, with no morality. They become pragmatic, which means all you need to do is change the practical consequences around them, and they will follow you like water, like air, like anything. You know, that's all you need to do with these dumbasses, because, you know what I mean? There's just nothing they won't take. Nothing they won't take, man. There's nothing people won't take, because they're stupid, weak, immoral people. Most of them are retarded. And that's the problem. You know?
Oh, yeah. Not cool. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Come on, fight me. United we stand, and divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio. We've been discussing the last airbender and the ridiculously large amount of occultic symbolism, and Will is far more familiar than I, conveniently enough, and has explained a lot of the old school devil worshipping, etc., with old Alice Bailey.
Well, it's new school cool now, man. I mean, everyone's doing it.
Yeah. Hey, you know what was real strange? I was kind of thinking about this. The young girls, stuff like that in our society, for some reason, they think it's really, really awesome to pretend to be witches. You know, You get little wands and stuff like this and try and cast spells on people and, you know. What is happening to our youth, man? Have we seriously descended so far?
Well, girls have always been into that side of things. I've noticed that as I was growing up, sort of, you know, 13, 14, 15, the girls I used to hang out back with back then, you know, and I knew nothing of the occult back then. I was just an ordinary person. But, I took a friend and she was into Ouija board stuff and seances and doing readings. And I always thought of it as a, you know, I said to her straight away, I said, this is worse than racism. You're classing people, based upon what rock was closest to them when they were born. It's insane. At least if you were racist towards me, there'd be an element of truth because, you know, we do have a genetic makeup that has certain character traits, perhaps, certain physical traits. But then they go on these charts which are completely outdated compared to where celestial bodies are known to be today. So even if their theory was right, in practice it would be wrong. But girls like that side of things, and part of it's not bad because it's more because they're not so fact-based. You know what I mean? Because they're not so right-brained. Perhaps they tend to more of the spiritual new age stuff. Like if you go to a new age practitioner of any sort, you'll find it's 80% women. And then the guys that are there, kind of like leftist hippie-looking ones, you know, like this is me being judgmental, Will, but it's true. You'll see, I'm here about talking about trends, not about, you know, the exceptions to the rule.
Oh, we need to do a show called Judgmental Will. Continue.
This is it, man. I mean,
well, in fact, I came up with a great idea yesterday, bro. We need to have make a taxi company called Co-opted Cabs.
Yeah, awesome. Why doesn't Murray start that?
Yeah. Co-opted taxis. Yeah.
If you on the subject of the Maitreya though, the sort of the New Age Christ, if you do any sort of research, you'll see that Maitreya is mentioned in the same context as a guy called Krishnamurti. And this Krishna dude, he was in Zeitgeist quite a bit. In addendum, they had him in sort of religious ecstasy. He's the old Indian guy there who talks upon free your spirit and realize the God spirits. And you know what I mean? he lived in him and his family moved to this particular area in India where it was prophesied for this world Christ to arise years before he was kind of spotted, if you will, by the Theosophics, and some people believe the world Christ would be inherited through him, like come through his body. You know, scary stuff, and they picked him for Zeitgeist. You know, just to add to all the accusations of being New Age establishment whores, you know, they picked this world Christ guy, like unbelievable. You know, are you just trying to make the case for yourself being, you know, about a New Age world religion?
It's pretty dodgy, isn't it, bro? And you know, you tell Zeitgeist people about this, but they're not aware of occultic symbolism. They're not aware of black magic. They're not aware of any of these other elements that are so integral to the New World Order's game plan, right, that they just simply cannot see it, right?
And they're just like fundamentalist Christians. Christians run the world. It's capitalism and Christianity. You know, it's such a primitive analysis of the world around you. So yeah. Primitive. I believed that when I was about 16. You know, you're meant to move on from that, kids. You know? Stupid people. And I hate to see people in their 30s and 40s and 50s still believing that. Like, it really does anger me because then all their energy is focused in the wrong place. And worse than that, most of their solutions are, in fact, the enemy.
Yeah. Hey, maybe it is possible to educate people, because that's the interesting thing about Zeitgeist, right? Is that they run around saying, "Oh, we need to educate people as to the resource-based economy." Now, I'm talking about like as far as interaction or something. You know, it sounds like a good theory, but I don't know. There's a whole bunch of ways it could easily be manipulated and according to Will and many others, methinks, there ain't no possibility that this ain't a psyop. All right, the amount of symbolism, the occult references, the God spirit, all total Illuminati. So, why are people not realizing this? You know, I mean,
the Illuminati
Zeitgeist came out of nowhere. Came really, really, really powerful film, you know. And whether or not Peter Joseph is a total occult sellout or something like that, I don't know for shizzle, but I can take a hunch that a man in the in the financial sector as he was probably rubbed shoulders with some very, very wealthy and all powerful people. He felt that it was all a lie and then got out of it, so he says. And I don't know. I mean, if you watch the interview, was it Who Is Peter Joseph? I actually kind of like the guy, you know, and maybe that's part of his allure, is that he's...
Look, I like him.
But
I like
on,
him
on
too.
The other hand, yeah.
I like him like I like Peter Schiff. Peter Schiff has got great knowledge on economics, and he knows about the looming collapse and gold and silver and all these markets. Peter Schiff is a very intelligent guy. But Peter Schiff annoys the hell out of me when it comes to anything related to 9/11 or the New World Order or any of that. And that's why, if you notice, when he's interviewed on Truth of Channels, they don't go into that very often. Because he just thinks everything's random. He doesn't think 9/11 was an inside job. He doesn't, you know what I mean? In fact, he's staunchly against it. And he criticizes it, and anyone can see that on YouTube. Just go Peter Schiff 9/11. And Peter Joseph is the same. He's got good knowledge. He's a smart guy. Smart man. Knows a lot of things I can't understand. But he adamantly refuses to accept basic facts. You know what I mean? Basic historical and current facts. As it relates to the system being completely contrived and co-opted by an elite. He ignores the fact that there are an elite and that there are real, you know, obviously he says 9/11 was committed by someone, but then he thinks that the someone doesn't exist. No, someone being the New World Order. He thinks that somehow, oh, it's just, that's a side effect of, you know, the differential vantage.
Yeah.
Somebody that the monetary system brings about. Just like the commies say, oh, everything's a side effect of capitalism.
Yeah, that's right. As soon as somebody has more money than somebody else, buildings blow themselves up into dust.
Yeah, no, differential monetary advantage doesn't do that. Differential intelligence, differential military capabilities, differential secret societies do that. I mean, you know, like, but Peter Joseph doesn't want to go there. And when someone doesn't want to go there, it rings alarm bells in my head that they are covering up for someone.
Yeah.
And that's why they're allowed to operate within a controlled world. They're allowed to operate. And that's why he can get more views than all of Alex Jones's movies. Okay, he was only second to the Loose Change series, but I think they've now overtaken that. He's either first or second in terms of alternative documentaries in current history being viewed. Amazing, huh? Alex Jones there, 14, 15 years, putting out things every year, working away at it, slowly building a base. This guy comes, pow. We've got all the occultists following us. Yeah, the world's full of them. Beautiful. This is going to empower our system. You know, I'm not saying that everyone follows that. It's too much for some people. There's a lot of squares out there that can't handle Zeitgeist. Sure. Well, that opposition doesn't necessarily mean they're for real.
Well, it's difficult to know who your enemies are in this day and age of psyop warfare and intelligence agencies running amok and all of that stuff. And on a side note here, a little article to read out, psychological evidence for Sixth Sense found. A line of this is from Dateline Zero. Line of research into what makes two people click may be leading to solid evidence of a sixth sense. The research is looking at the moment when two people find that spark during interaction, that moment of oneness, and it's offering a compelling look at what happens in the mind and physiology when two people have a sense of what one another are thinking and feeling beyond exchange of words and visual cues. The research is being led by Tricia Stratford, a clinical psychosynthesis psychotherapist, psychotherapist without psycho, the rapist. In private practice, a clinical supervisor and trainer and lecturer in neuroscience and psychotherapy, Tricia is interested in the interplay between spirit and the conscious self and the mind and the brain and how this plays out in our relationships. Now, so interestingly enough, if you're a scientist, psychotherapist or something like that, where does spirit come into it? You know, I'm not 100% sure, but sounds kind of a bit more religious to me than a science. Dr. Tricia Stratford of Sydney's University of Technology studied the brains and heartbeats of 30 volunteers during counselling sessions. According to an article of the Daily Mail, she identified a crucial moment when the counsellor and patient's brain started to work in sync in an altered state. This is something nearly everyone has experienced, that moment when you and the someone else that you find that you're both on the same page, so to speak. This is an experience that Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi calls flow. Csikszentmihalyi, that's a very cool name. Now, the research pointed to the existence of a sixth sense after researchers found identical patterns of brain activity in volunteers who had become so close that they were psychologically aligned. The researchers conducted an analysis of brain activity in patients and counsellors in therapy sessions. And Mrs. Stratford said that her research could also provide clues about how best to communicate with or chat up a potential partner using the sixth sense, which has long been suggested but never extensively identified in science. That's right. The best discovery you can have for a psychic connection with another human being is to help you pick up chicks. She observed 30 volunteers using electrocardiography and a monitor to the finger and to measure skin conductance resonance to identify the moment of alignment or oneness during individual counselling with a therapist. Oneness, doesn't that sound a little bit occultic? Well, and Harvard Medical School psychiatrist Carl Marcy established a connection or psychological concordance between two people, but a study conducted 3 years ago was limited and he called for more research. Interestingly, I had already started my PhD looking into the same thing as Dr. Marcy, said Mrs. Stratford, who has published one paper and is awaiting publication of three others submitted to international journals. I replicated his research, but then I froze that point of two people becoming one and looked at what was happening in the brain. Now, isn't that great, ladies and gentlemen? We can tell your sixth sense already. We'll probably have a van for it. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no.
I wanna know.
Oh, no, no.
Whose side are you on? Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're flying. Nah, we're not actually. We're sitting around here on Urkla. We're Kiwis, bro. We're flightless. And speaking of flightless, Kiwis are also brainless. Because when the South Island mayors, not 1 week after the people of Auckland foolishly accept the dictatorship of a mayor, Then the South Island mayors go, "Oh, you know what we need a super city of dictatorship in order to compete with the Northern super city dictatorship, you know? And we want to create the exact same mayoral forum which the original super city dictatorship set up over a year and a half ago to swindle all the people's power and completely undermine all the other mayors and democratic process in the region. Wouldn't that be really good for our economy? God! Dang it! These people are scum bags. It upsets me so much. You know, to see
and the good for the economy excuse. It's used so much without them understanding the economy.
Oh yeah, I mean yeah.
Huh?
I want to go. You know what we should do, Will? Vox Popular. All right, let's go on the street. Ask people to define economy. They don't know. They got not a clue. Even the definition, they don't know, let alone understanding it in any way, shape, or form. It's
yeah,
not
the mechanics of it.
An understanding that people possess. Oh, God.
I mean, I know it's difficult, too. I only understand, like, the basic sort of, you know, pistons and rods and block of the economy. There's a lot of kind of, there's a lot of details that just go way over your head, you know, but it's just understanding the essential ingredients. It's just like anything else. It's under- I mean, people are probably laughing at me after the first part of the show focused on the occult so much, but really, I'm serious about it. You know how many stars there are around the place? You go around today, just spend your day and see how many pentagrams you see as symbols for all manner of things. Yeah, that are called stars. Since when did a star look like that? How did it become like that?
Yep.
And then you start asking yourself, so who's pushing this stuff? So why, you know what I mean? Who's setting the bounds of our reality? That's what this whole thing's about. This was for me anyway. It's about understanding the nature of your reality. You know? And then you can maybe start to get places. If you understand the economy, if you understand how corporations and the government work hand in hand, if you understand what then their religion is, then you can start to understand what's coming down on us. And it's a real difficult cocktail, I know, but...
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And this brings us back onto that that psychological sixth sense found. And you were talking, well, about how they're trying to break down everything, right? Like trying to make everything definable, right? And I'm kind of at a loss here because I think that there's nothing in life really that's so clearly definable that it could that the definition could never change. My belief structure is very different from most people. I my mind can be changed about anything, you know? Really?
I like consistency in definitions because they're always changing, i.e. the definition of what it is to be a conspiracy theorist or anything else. The ability to change definitions is their ability to forward themselves upon people.
Mm. But of course, the truth movement could use that as well, couldn't they? If we could change the meanings back or into different
ones.
But
we have
ones.
To look at who's got the bigger movement, and they have instead of the momentum. Yeah,
well,
mean,
look at whose movement is growing the fastest, though. The truth movement is growing exponentially.
Yeah, but ours has got an upper limit. It's got a theoretical upper limit. Theirs doesn't, because stupidity is the common denominator. Is it more or less easy to push 1,000 sheep into a large pen or a tiny pen? You know, I mean, like they're gonna get their way. It's just the way. It's just how long it takes. But I mean,
yeah. I think that every moment we resist, their plans are delayed further. Right. There used to be plans for world government by 2005 or something like that. I can't remember exactly where I heard that. But point is,
2000.
2000. Yeah, world government by 2000. Wouldn't that be fabulous? No. But because of people in the truth movement exposing them, all right, they've had to go into hiding, you know, many, many times, more or less. But they always come back, you know. This is what
Remember
people don't get,
times.
Is that they're indefeatable. as far as you know, the New World Order agenda is concerned. Not that you can't beat them, but it's more the fact that if you're trying to challenge one particular agenda or something like that, if you think that you have a victory, trust me, you actually haven't had a total victory. You've had a small victory, okay? Because they will come back and they will try it again, and that means you need to be eternally vigilant, like the people who are refusing to go to the new Copenhagen summit. Not the new Copenhagen summit, the new Mexican summit or whatever, which most world leaders are snubbing, saying that the talks will collapse. All right? A climate change conference in the spring break resort of Cancun seems unlikely to be as much fun. The last United Nations summit on global warming in Copenhagen at the end of last year ended in failure and recrimination. More than 100 heads of state turned up, hoping to be part of a deal that would save the world, but failed to get any legal agreement to stop rising temperatures. This year, they are declining even to attend. Instead, sending environment ministers and playing down the talks as much as possible. All right, now, here's my theory. My theory is that what's going to happen there is they'll just send these ministers in behind closed doors, and they'll sign all these agreements in secret, don't tell nobody about them, and play down the entire conference as much as possible so that they can secretively pass draconian climate change legislation taxes. That's not a conspiracy theory. What do you reckon? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show as well. And solidarity, baby. Oh, yes. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. My co-host, Will. And we're talking about occult symbolism, right? It's quite funny. If anybody out there used to play Warhammer 40,000, it's a little game with models and stuff like this, and there's this race of models and stuff that you can collect called Eldar. And they have all these, all this symbols for their different armies and stuff that you can get. One of which is a snake, a stylized serpent, of course. Others are all-seeing eyes. Others are gates, what you call spirit gates, which I recognize from a film called The Grudge 2. And others are hearts with crosses on them, you know. And it seems to me that, wow, is there ever any, well, shall we say, anything popular that doesn't involve occultic symbolism?
Well, here's a good example. According to the Wiccan and Pagan calendar, witches follow this, druids follow this, masons follow this, the Sabbat of Astara constellation, or the spring equinox, in the Northern Hemisphere is the 20th of March, which is the date that George W. waited to commence the war, if you remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, they do that all the time, don't they? I mean, it's like blood sacrifice. Apparently, a lot of the symbols on uniforms and such like this represent the are supposed to represent the country that you're on or the military contingent that you're on. And it turns out that if they are occult symbols, and most military insignias are, then when you die, it counts as a blood sacrifice.
Yep.
You know,
now we're getting somewhere. This is
just it. Just like on 9/11 is a supposedly a day to sacrifice by burning.
Yeah, well, 9/11. If you look at 9/11 in history, you'll find some pretty remarkable goings on, shall we say? Pretty sickening, really. If you look at any day in history, you will too. But 9/11 in particular. Because, if you split all world events up by 365, you're going to find a lot of crap in each day. But, you know, being entirely logical here, you're right, Vinny. They do have high holy days. September 23rd is one of them. Yeah, just 21st of December is another one. That's called the Sabbat of Letha. And then, of course, Sabbat of Yule also, 21st December. So, yeah, I mean, they've got their days. Watch for the days. Stay
at home. Yeah, and coincidentally, big events all happen on these days. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back after the break to spread a little bit more occult love.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and, incidentally, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and in partnership with gorillamedia.co.nz. We bring you our special weekly guest, who we always enjoy his perspective on, Tim Selwyn from 2Mecca at 2mecca.blogspot.com. Tim,
good morning, Vinnie. Good morning, Will.
Morning, Tim.
How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, we're discussing occultic stuff. You know, we're just fabulous, mate.
The mayoralty, the super city. We just can't wait for the super city to spread throughout New Zealand and take over every single district.
Did you check out the super city article in the Otago Daily Times, mate, saying that all the southern mayors are now really, they feel threatened by the economic power of the super city. So now, in order to resist the evils, bad super city-ness, they have to make a bigger super city out of the entire South Island with an unlawfully acquired mayoral forum.
Well, it's a little bit, maybe they're taking this whole ECAN Canterbury thing to its logical conclusion as well. I mean, that's going to be next, you know.
The New World Order to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, well, why don't you just kill yourselves now?
That sort of regional thing to and one ring will bind them all. I mean, that's where it's going, I suppose. But, they've been able to get quite a bit of money out of central government over the years, of course, and that's, I mean, and Auckland, a unified Auckland speaking with one voice is actually going to be a threat, but not so much, I think, to the South Island as to Wellington itself, the capital, which has had a very good run over the years. I mean, we just have to look at the way resources are allocated around the place to see that, Wellington has had electric rail, commuter rail, since I think the 1940s. Auckland, we're still waiting for it. You know what I mean? They've been in the honeypot for many, many years, and they've taken advantage of the fact that Auckland has been divided into so many councils in order to gouge out more than their fair share. And the South Island as well, fair enough. I suppose they're looking at it and saying, well, Auckland might actually get its fair share for once. And so, relatively speaking, South Island, you know, as a whole, will get less. I think that's probably true. That's where it might go. But, I mean, there's nothing to stop them forming a little South Island patriotic committee there and sending a little delegation to Wellington every now and again to try to convince them that the place that grows all of the sheep and an increasing proportion of the cattle should be able to get more funding for their, I don't know what they'll get funding for exactly, because hardly anyone lives there, but I mean, it's not as if they've got any motorways or any commuter issues or anything like that. I mean, I don't actually know what they'll need the money for in the end, but maybe to put fluoride in the last remaining water supplies down there or something. I don't know. Vinny, what do the South Islanders want exactly? I haven't actually read the story myself. What are they after?
Basically, they've said that they need to the southern mayors, I believe Bob Parker and Tim Shadbolt from Invercargill, as well as some other dude who I've not heard of, decided that they would have a mayoral forum, much like the mayoral forum coup earlier on before the Auckland Super City came along, when they excluded all the mayors who didn't want to amalgamate everything dictatorially from the conference, and included only those who would enforce the New World Order Agenda 21 party line, right? And I'm sure that a similar thing will happen, where everybody who actually cares about their people is excluded from the debate, and everybody who is fully, fully behind enslaving everybody will get all the press coverage they want. Now, before we continue on with this, we got a great comment from one of our listeners about the show here. Hiya, your radio show is wonderful, and quite a relief for me to have found. I very much enjoy your shows and the banter between you and Will. The bumper music is great too. Sub focus! I am a middle-aged female living in the mountains of Wyoming. I have been awake now for about 7 years, and as it turns out, everyone I know is perfectly happy to be an idiot, and they don't want to listen to anything I have to say. And, on that note, if this listener's listening, pretty sure she will be. What you do is, like our producer has done, he's just been sending Vinnie Eastwood show links to his children that are still living in the United States. And now they listen to the show, and they quite like it too. The area in which I live doesn't have any meetup groups or anything that would attract like-minded people, so I go about my days dealing with all these subjects quite alone. It helps me to hear you and Will discussing this subject, especially because it is so frustrating to be among sheep. You guys help me keep it all in perspective, are informative, and make me laugh at the same time. Thanks for being you, keeping up the great work. Oh, the tyranny! You got that right, Vinny. Yeah. And I think that people like
Wyoming is a lot like the South Island, actually, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Very, very true. Maybe you'll all have a forced amalgamation as well, you lucky Wyoming devils.
Yeah, thanks for the comment, and I would suggest that you start a local group that you want to see in your area so you can have some discussion. There's got to be some fluoride heads who want to break out of it.
Mm-mm. And also, breaking news as well, Jonathan Irish, who we had on yesterday about his baby girl being taken by a child pedophile. No, sorry. Corporate pedophile services. apparently, his daughter has now been injured/abused. All right. the new developments in the Cheyenne Irish CPS kidnapping case are now going to be blown wide open. He called into a live show on Alex's cell phone at about 12:40 Central Time. When the mother and father were given visitation due to public pressure and the baby arrived, she was lethargic. They decided to change the baby's diaper since that will usually rouse the child. When the diaper came off, there was blood all over her vaginal area. The DHHS worker that was there to supervise the visitation mumbled, "We're screwed."
And if they, I hope they've got this all on video or something. Like, no, I hope they've got this recorded, because they're going to need to take these guys to clean us. They're going to absolutely need to. Oh, man. Yeah. What do you do? What do you do when a big government's got completely out of control and you've got a servile public that sits around watching American Idol?
Well, I would say that Jonathan Irish should do the same thing that Doc Bean does, and you know, just march in there with a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of family, and just never leave the child's side. But you know, it's just, man, when you've got your child in the custody of raping, pillaging, scumbag filth like corporate pedophile services, shoot, man. Don't leave your kids alone with them at all. I mean, and that's the problem with it, is that they're illegally being kept from their own daughter. You know, and it's all because of this guy's political views. You know, he's an oath keeper. He's somebody who swore to uphold the Constitution and took his oath seriously. And these people don't take those kind of oaths seriously at all. The only oath that they take is to Satan.
They just have allegiance to themselves and their own stupid little lives. And this is why, you know, for those military guys who sent me an email the other day, this is why I don't think you're in the right battle. As much as I respect you guys and don't want to see you blown up by a roadside bomb or anything, you guys need to be at home. You guys need to be fighting this sort of battle. You swore an oath to protect your country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And now the domestic enemies are driving down your town, your street, your country. And when they do this sort of thing to little kids, you know, they should be storming that hospital with troops and wringing the necks of those individuals responsible.
Yeah, I mean, my speculation is, I mean, a baby with blood in the vaginal area, I would say that 3-day-old baby has been raped. All right, they better take.
Yeah, we're not going to speculate here on the show, man. But you know,
yeah. Well, that's something that happens all the time. You know, it wouldn't be surprising in the least to me if that was the case, because it happens all the time. That's what CPS does. They rape little children all the time.
Whatever's happened is
they love
it. Got to be. If the government wants to have total control of things as they do, then they have total responsibility. And this is on Barack Obama's head.
Yeah, well, that's right. No? That's absolutely true. When custody goes from one person or one organisation to another, that's right. All of the responsibility falls on that person. And the thing is, if you want to, you know, people in custody battles have and in the States have found their way down to New Zealand, but. I think it's called, is it the Hague Protocol or whatever it's called, that means that the children must be returned to their country of origin, I think it is. It's an international agreement. I can't quite remember what it's called, but we've signed up to it. So we've had a few cases down here of parents who have made very serious allegations, sort of along the tenor of what you're talking about, Vinny, and they've had to, under the procedures. Well, I mean, they have to go through court, of course. But I mean,
secret courts, you know, of course.
Well, we've signed up to this international agreement. It's as simple as that. And so, everyone, all of these children, have to be sent back to their countries of origin. And there's the odd occasion where New Zealand children have gone overseas and had to have come back too. I just can't quite remember what it's called now. I think it's the.
This is an American protocol. Citizen, though, in their own country.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, what can you do? Escape to Canada or something. But I'm just saying that they would have signed the agreement too, right? So basically you're going to have to go to a country that hasn't signed the agreement, unfortunately. I know that's not much of an option there. Exactly. There should be rights in one's own country, surely, to resolve it.
Yeah, but that's probably part of the New World Order agenda as well, you know. Take away everybody's rights, you know, and convince them that having no rights is a good thing. Convince them that being an idiot is the smart thing to do.
And yeah, like if that was my kid or something, I wouldn't be restraining myself right now. I'd be in there. And, you know, and then they do use, they would shoot you. They would gun you down. You know, that's how sick the system is. And if you went in there by force without any weapons and you went in there to take your kid back as the legal parent, guardian of that child, you know, they would use force on you. Guaranteed.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just brutal, right? But back on to New Zealand. Tim, what's been happening this week?
Well, the big news was, and I guess you've been covering it, was the local body elections, which in New Zealand all happen at exactly the same time, which is like the second Saturday in October, I think is how they do it. So we have this big rush. And in this country, we have postal voting. It doesn't mean people go crazy and then vote. It means that you get sent it in the mail and then you mark your ballots and then you send it back in the post. And this happens about 3 weeks prior to the actual what's called polling day, but we actually get our ballots in the mail about three and a half weeks beforehand. So it's quite interesting to have. It used to be, I think, we had to turn up to it in the old days. And previously, in the 1980s and before, it was only the ratepayers themselves, the people who pay the local land taxes, basically on that roll, that got to vote. If you were an impoverished person who rented property, you got no democratic rights. Fortunately, that has changed, and everyone now, everyone who's on the parliamentary electoral roll does have a vote here. So that sort of changed things, and that upped the turnout and the participation. But it had been falling off recently, especially in Auckland. But Auckland, which is the biggest city, 1.4 million, I suppose your listeners are well aware now that there was a forced amalgamation by the right-wingers in the government, forced it together. And so there was an expectation that the turnout, the participation would rise, and it has. And it actually cracked 50% for, been a long time, I think, since it's ever it was up at 50, but just 50.1 or something, 51.1 or something percent. Thing to
I
keep
could
in
venture
mind.
A guess as to why the turnout was so big, that the rest of Auckland's regions really, really hate John Banks, and they decided to come out in force to ensure that he didn't have any control over them.
That's right. There was a candidate here going for the mayoralty. He was a mayor of one of the preceding existing cities. This right winger, he used to be the minister of police, and he used to have this. And then after that, too controversial, very right wing conservative guy, who was it? Well, he did many famous quotes and everything. I guess one was that he cares more about the penguins in Antarctica than he does about some people in Auckland.
He's an animal rights activist.
Yeah. After that, he got basically alienated, and he almost lost his seat up north there in Parliament. And then he went on Talkback Radio for many years. And I actually liked listening to him on Talkback Radio because I just disagreed with basically everything he said. He just horrified and sickened me, and I used to listen in to be horrified and sickened and outraged.
Horrified, sickened, and outraged. Remember, Will, I talk on occasion about my girlfriend's national mate, the one who votes for Banks and all of that. Okay, this is a great. I reached a new low yesterday. I said, well, you know, it'd be, all these tax exempt foundations, they just give a whole bunch of money to sterilize all the Africans without their knowledge. And she says, yeah, I agree with that.
What do you mean? She agrees that you're right about that happening?
No. She agrees that we should just sterilize all of Africa.
Oh. Is she South
without
African?
Without their consent and without their knowledge.
Is she South African?
No, she's a New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
This is really the hard thing is, Vinny, is it's like it's easy to say and think these things when you're young or dumb or something, but when you grow up and you actually see people hurting, in pain, suffering, you know, can you actually want that to happen? Will that on anyone anymore? Can you?
She would say it wouldn't have happened if they were sterilized.
Yeah. Or did you tell her that they've killed most of the black people that ever existed in America?
No, because it was just kind of like, well, okay, you know, patron saint of lost causes, right?
Yeah, well, I don't
worship her.
and that was John Banks's people that he was appealing to in the end. There was the person you're talking about, Vinny. That was the classic voter that he was going after, and that was the only person who was going to support him. In the end, he made a derogatory comment about his main rival, Len Brown, being a Labor mayor from South Auckland. Now, South Auckland is what we would call the dog whistle, basically, for brown people living in the south of the city. And that was a very divisive thing.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our special guest is Tim Selwyn from Tuneka. And we'll be right back after the break.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief.
And we are back.
There's too much confusion.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We had a quick discussion over the break about the explicit reference of Jonathan Irish's child bleeding. And
don't mention it again.
But I just kind of wanted to say the reason why I say this is because this one particular case of child kidnapping and abuse, we can use it as a lightning rod to get people's ears pricked up to this, because there is massive amounts of child abuse going on in all of our nations at the moment at the hands of very, very evil people who do it on a grand scale. And if we can use this case, and I don't want to be appear insensitive here, but if we can use this case to expand public awareness of this huge problem, the abuse of this one little girl will save thousands of little children's lives, okay, and that's the reason.
Vinny,
I just want to say it may have been terrible and horrifying to listen to, but it is the reality.
I just want to say the priority is that we get Jonathan and his daughter back, and
absolutely,
and we just got to do what we can. So after this show, I'm going to have a bit of breakfast, and then I'm going to make a video based upon yesterday's transcript. And going to try and push that around as I can. And, you know, Vinny's doing what he's doing. We're all doing what we're doing to try and help Jonathan get his kid back. That's all that matters. And then hopefully things take their course from there. No, but he needs to get his kid back ASAP this week. It needs to happen.
I mean, it should have happened like yesterday, you know.
Now they're going to say the kid can't go home. You know what I mean? They're just making more excuses. You know, they're snakes, these guys. They really are. And so they're going to say, oh, look, it's not safe for the child to go home now, and yada, yada, yada. Of course. Even if they wanted to give it to them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's happening all over the world, too. It's not just an American, you know, specifically problem either, is it, really?
But it's just that it happens, you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah.
It's like September
11th. And this
11.
Is the state we're talking about. I mean, the Catholic Church is another, you know, quasi-state in some countries. You know, this abuse rings have happened and have been chronicled as being happening. I mean, there were situations like in Quebec up until the 1960s, the Catholic Church basically run the entire education system. You know, I mean, there are private institutions as well that have immense quasi governmental powers over children, and it's fallen into the hands of abusers as well. So, I mean, it's a widespread problem, I'd say, all over the show, this sort of thing.
That's the cool thing about the show is that, you know, everything's basically a widespread issue. And, you know, we're New Zealanders, we're broadcasting in America, and, you know, everybody in America gets it. A1, because we're speaking English, of course, but the same element is the exact same tyranny that oppresses the American people and is degrading the American society is oppressing the Kiwi people and destroying the Kiwi society, isn't it? And the same with every other country in the world. Okay, we're all in this together. There is no lines drawn anymore, okay? You are either the New World Order or you are free humanity, you know, and you got to make your choice. And us on this show, me, Will and Tim, you know, we've made our choice. We're not going to be slaves and we're not going to, you know, say nothing as black uniformed troops march over our people, you know?
Well, I'll at least write an angry blog about it, Vinny, you know? As they come smashing through the door, you know. But you're talking
reminds me of something that was said in the last Airbender, that the person who's going to save the world doesn't actually need to destroy anybody because all wars are won in the heart.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. Now, we were talking about our super city here. That awful, awful moniker, which I wish they would stop using for this forced amalgamation by the government of these local authorities in this bit of New Zealand, which is basically a third of the population. And this awful, awful guy called John Banks, who used to be the mayor of part of the city, and he was using very divisive racial dog whistle tactics and negativity towards his leading opponent there towards the end. And that sort of summarised sort of people that he was trying to attract to him, which was like, Vinny, you were saying, this ultra-right-wing woman that you were quoting about sterilising Africans or whatever. And this is classic John Banks' territory. As I say, I used to listen to his radio show just to get upset about it because he'd say the most outrageous, derogatory, racist, small-minded things about all sorts of minorities. I mean,
it sounds like he's a columnist. It sounds like he's a columnist from
Eugenics Quarterly. Yeah, he is a psycho. Like, I mean, because he was a dog, a pet lover, for example, an animal rights activist, he was railing, I think, for a year or two about Chinese and Koreans eating dogs or something, you know, and that set him off. You know, that was so he could use some of the positive aspects. Well, he would use some of the positive aspects, with the very few positive aspects that he had, for negative purposes, you know, to attack minority groups based on absolutely, you know, just basically using prejudice. And in the end, it was good because it actually drove up the voter turnout in Auckland, and we kicked him, to the curb big time. He lost by about, was it 60,000 votes he lost in the end. The winner got almost 250,000 votes. So in the turnout, as I was saying, actually reached 50%, which in local body terms in Auckland is absolutely huge. And if you consider that large, one-third of the population at least are from overseas, probably a little bit more, and also people from the rest of New Zealand as well. So, I mean, there's actually hardly any born and bred Aucklanders. And there are a lot of foreign immigrants who can barely speak English as well. So when it's 50% turnout, that's actually equivalent to probably 60% turnout in the rest of New Zealand because of the large immigrant population that doesn't have any familiarity with the voting issues or in some cases even the language. So actually that was a really, really good turnout. Yeah.
Can I ask you something, Tim? When the candidates run and they say that their mantle is independent, and we have people who belong to the National Party running as independents. We have people who belong to the Labour Party running as independents. What does that actually mean? Because they're obviously not independent in the way that I think it means that.
Yeah, they're independent of the other party that they're not members of, Vinny. Yeah, but that in this, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's an absolute farce. And in this country, it's seen as a big negative for the leading mayoral candidates to be associated with or to put on the ballot form that they are from one party or another. So, I mean, historically speaking, it's a convention. At the local level, the local board level, it's quite common to organise into tickets and to be transparently, you know, National Party / right wing or CNR and or left wing Green Labour Alliance, etc., left wing. But at the mayoral level, it's always been seen as counterproductive because the main factor with the mayoralty is that they sit at the top of the table and their job is basically to bring the council, which might be fractured with tickets, together and be that unifying figure. So I think that they assume or they think that to campaign on a left or right ticket would be polarising and that the finger would be pointed to them saying, well, you aren't unifying, you can't bring the council together because you've taken one side and that means that you'll be against the other person. And that's, and as a political tactic, I think that's why it happens. But of course, these people are very, very, as I was saying, this John Banks character, he's National Party through and through. You can't get more blue on the spectrum than John Banks, mate. You know, a former National Party minister, for heaven's sakes. And then on the other side, the winning candidate, Len Brown, Labour Party guy from way back. We had Labour Party people helping on his campaign. We had the EPMU, the main Labour Party associated union here, backing them at an organisational level, campaign level. We've had all sorts of Labour Party MPs basically publicly backing and endorsing and everything short of actually door knocking for him. So very, very partisan. But of course, there's this farce where we go and look at the ballot paper, right? And just about everyone has listed themselves as independent.
As an independent.
And it's ridiculous. The only one who's actually been truthful in all of this, funnily enough, are the communist candidates. At least they state what they're for. At least they'll go, I'm a communist, you know? But you can't say with the rest of these guys. And it is, it's a bit of a charade.
Yeah. And the main candidates are even worse communists than the people who actually say that they are communists.
Well, they're statists, I guess, and they've got to. Well, I mean, they'll be slaves of the bureaucrats, really. I mean, this is what it comes down to. It's such an unwieldy organisation, and the bureaucratic anarchy of trying to combine seven councils into one council. It'll be apparently the largest municipal council in the whole of Australasia. So there's not even a council in Australia that's going to be bigger than this Auckland council. And, well, what are they going to do? They haven't got the time. They basically won't have the human resources or the inclination to go through and actually get to grips with what the bureaucracy is going to be foisting on the 1.4 million people of Auckland, because There's a lot of paperwork there, and you can't, one person can't physically get through that amount of work. And I mean, you're talking about him being, or that Len Brown, the new mayor, is mayor elect, is saying that, you know, he's going to provide a vision and all that stuff. I think you're going to find, Vinny, that, and your mate Penny Bright will probably testify to this, especially that basically they become captured by the bureaucracy, and all they get is reports. And I've had a stint on a community board as well, so I know this is true. You get official reports from the officials, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end they say recommendation, approve, or recommendation, disapprove, or whatever it is. And you're thinking, I don't need your goddamn recommendation. You know, I don't need your recommendation. You just provide the facts, mate. We're sitting here as democratically elected people. It's up to us to make our recommendation. We don't need you to tell us what to do and what not to do, thank you very much. So I always ignored what the council recommendation was because that prejudices the entire affair. And when you have a workload that this new council is going to have, you know, I mean, what are people realistically going to do? I mean, there's only 20 people plus the mayor on that council, and there's going to be so much paperwork. What they're going to do is they scan down to what the officer says, approve, disapprove. They probably put a highlighter through it, and that's how the council is going to be run. I mean, you probably know with Penny Bright, she's had a huge run, and actually I saw her in action. She was a gadfly on the Auckland City Council here, and in the previous mayoralty of Dick Hubbard, I saw it firsthand myself. There she was going hammer and tong at the council and criticising the officers of doing a backdoor private deal to take over, which is going to be true of this council as it was of theirs, and she was there and she was putting up some very good arguments, although very tersely and in the way that she does, God bless her. But there she was making the case on behalf of the ratepayers and citizens of Auckland. And she was having a go, and Dick Hubbard, the mayor, at one point, and I was in the room, so I knew what happened, he got angry that the council officers were being criticised, and he stood up and he walked out of his own meeting because of the criticism of the council officers. And I sort of had a chat with him later on, and he said he did it to protect the officers. Mate, who are you protecting?
Yeah, it's all...
Mate, what about protecting us?
Don't you just love it when they pile on the lies like it's a huge trash pickup? You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Lil and Tim, and we'll be right back.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always.
We're back live. Oh yeah. Hey, urgent breaking news here. The case with what's his name? Jonathan Irish with his little girl has just broken. Urgent, the sheriff now has the baby. He has taken over Jonathan's case, and the baby is no longer held by CPS. Thank you very much. Yes, I knew that would happen. Nice. Somebody would actually step in and do the right thing for a change. Good on you, Sheriff. You know, seriously, it's about time a law enforcement official actually enforced something that was lawful. But, yeah, all right, great, awesome. Thank you very much. Baby Cheyenne has been taken to a sexual assault speciality doctor under police escort. The sheriff is with the baby. Stephanie and Jonathan are following them, along with CPS. Baby Cheyenne is fussy, going in and out of consciousness, and when she is awake, doesn't want anyone touching her, which shows the level of her injuries and distress. Baby Cheyenne has been taken out of CPS custody by the sheriff, who has taken over the whole case. She is being seen by a sexual abuse specialist. There were also abrasions in her vaginal area. Baby Cheyenne has been taken out of CPS custody by the sheriff, who has taken over the whole case, and she's being seen by a sexual abuse therapist. That out from Infowars.com. Confirmed court did rely on Oath Keeper Association to take baby. So absolutely good news here. We had Jonathan on the show yesterday, and we expressed our heartfelt support of him, and my confidence was that he would get his daughter back very, very quickly, and it turns out, and time has proven me to be correct. Just thank God for that.
Result.
That makes me feel good. That makes me feel really good today, man. Like, seriously, all I was thinking about today was how badly dumbed down my people are, and how enslaved we all are, and how it's only going to get worse. And then great news like this comes in.
Fantastic. That is a good ending, and I just hope that CPS keep their filthy hands out of the case now and away from the Irish family.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that court issued affidavit, that shouldn't be end of it. Those people who, you know, those slime balls in the courts who issued that need to be taken to task big time.
Yeah, for sure, man. Oh, and also, interesting side note, with official corruption as the base premise here, there's a great article on Guerrilla Media at the moment. U.S. allows Afghanistan to aid Taliban, al-Qaeda, and drug trafficking. This is a public notice, 7201, pursuant to Section 707. 6D, the Department of State Foreign Operations and Related Programs Appropriations Act, relating to the assistance for the government of Afghanistan. And this is what it says. Pursuant to the authority vested in me as Secretary of State, that's Hillary Clinton, of course, including under the sections of the Department of State Foreign Operations and Related Programs Appropriations Act 2010.
Did you call her Hitlery? Did you call her Hitlery?
No, that was probably a Freudian slip. Now, oh, okay. I hereby waive the requirement in Section 7076D2 of the Act to certify that the government of Afghanistan is cooperating fully with United States efforts against the Taliban and al-Qaeda and to reduce poppy cultivation and illicit drug trafficking and report that it is vital to the national security interests of the United States to do so. The waiver shall be reported to the Congress promptly and published in the Federal Register, signed by Hillary Rodham Clinton on the 28th of September 2010. She's saying that the reason why we're there in Afghanistan is obviously to take out al-Qaeda, take out the Taliban, and take out the drug trafficking. And what she's saying here is that, oh, no, actually, no, sorry, we're going to give all those followers a waiver and say, can you please support al-Qaeda? Can you please support the Taliban? And can you please support drug trafficking? Because it's really important to the United States national security that you do.
Oh, bless her. Hitler, yeah.
Oh, the tyranny. Don't you just love that, man? It's great, isn't it? You know, especially when it gets out in public like this. I mean, come on. Wake up, people. Your government are a bunch of criminals. They're about as criminal as it gets. Gambinos ain't got nothing on Rodham Clinton.
Well, did you see yesterday, Vinny and Will, the list that the Prime Minister of New Zealand had approved to put into the under our terrorism suppression law there? The list, another seven organisations were added to the terrorist list. I think it was Islamic Jihad. I think with the armed wing of Hamas. The Al-Qassam Brigades, I think it was. And I'm just thinking, well, that's fascinating, you know, that they've added this. But what about adding, you know, an organisation that perhaps...
The Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Well, I mean, an organisation that had attacked and massacred like 1,000 people last Christmas and, you know, Christmas before last and, you know, an organisation that has nuclear weapons... You know, and refuses to even discuss them, and you know, an organisation based on, you know, that have been pulled up by the UN, well, on everyone, on many accounts of indiscriminate killing and that sort of thing. You know, basically the IDF and so forth. What about them? You know, that's a Middle East terrorist organisation, isn't it? And of course, the New Zealand government has gone and given them diplomatic immunity and invited them to open an embassy. I was saying, mate, the terrorist cell group is at number 39, the terrorist Wellington, 5 minutes walk from the New Zealand Parliament, and you invited them, Mr. Prime Minister. You know, they're the terrorists.
Sounds about right. Sounds about right. Does
it's all
not,
around
Tim?
Palm.
Thank you. All right, and thank you very much, Tim, for coming on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. With Will.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Vinnie, and good to speak to you too, Will.
Cheers,
Tom. Yeah, an intellectual orgasm going on here online at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We are broadcasting live from the future. The Intel Hub with Shep is coming up next, ladies and gentlemen, so definitely stay tuned and visit the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and you'll be able to get the archive of this show today to pass out as a link to all your friends and family. Spread the word about this show, because we speak the things that you think, and we'll be right back tomorrow.